The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Saver Card. Earn 4% cash back on dining and entertainment, 2% at grocery stores, and 1% on all other purchases.
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Over the next 3 to 5 years, who do you put your money on to come out on top? The best coach in a division, the best quarterback in a division, the best young core of talent in a division, or the best current overall team? If you figure that out, you'll figure out who you're betting on in the AFC East. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And you can join the conversation at 888-729-3776. The breaking news of the hour is that Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin has been arrested and charged with third-degree murder and manslaughter, according to Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman. We'll keep you up to date on that and the happenings in Minneapolis, Minnesota, here today on The Will Cain Show. All this week, we have been previewing various divisions in the NFL. We have talked about the NFC West. We've talked about the AFC South. I've made predictions for each and every one of those divisions. Today, we're looking at the AFC East. And the AFC East ranks right up there with the NFC West and the AFC South in the most up for grabs divisions in the NFL. And for the first time, because this is a division for decades that has been owned by the New England Patriots. Now, with Tom Brady's departure, for the first time in 20 years, it's anybody's bet. So who do you pick? Not to win the division this year, but rather to emerge as the new king of the AFC East. What's fascinating about that question, I believe, is it's what do you bank on? What do you build around? Is it draft capital that's managed to put together some of the best young talent in the NFL? Is it the current, probably best team in the division? Do you bank on the best quarterback? Or the greatest coach of all time? Let's go through those one at a time. The Buffalo Bills right now are probably the best team in that division. They were giving the Patriots a run for their money when the Patriots had Tom Brady. Now that they've gone to Jarrett Stidham, you have to believe that the development of Josh Allen and the core they have there, that defense, that team, Sean McDermott has started to put together, is the best team right now. But do you bank on that over the next 3 to 5 years as becoming the team to beat in that division? Because I don't think the Buffalo Bills have the best quarterback in the AFC East. No, for my money, I would probably say the New York Jets do in Sam Darnold, but Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, disagrees. He says, no, in fact, it is the Bills. Listen to this.
Well, with a 3-year window, I'm going Josh Allen. I just think the confidence that he has kind of started to play with, the immense talent that he has, the coaching stability that appears to be there in Buffalo, now surrounding him with better talent, Stephon Diggs now in Buffalo. I think it's going to be Josh Allen, and I think that you can make an argument for some of the other players, the quarterbacks in that division, but listen, I think they all kind of have certain situations that make me a little bit uneasy. That's why I go with Josh Allen.
Tim Hasselbeck betting on Josh Allen as the best quarterback over the next 3 years. We'll go into that deeper later on the Will Cain Show. Is it Josh Allen? Is it Tua Tagovailoa? I don't know. Is it Jarrett Stidham? Or is it Sam Darnold? Because I believe the Jets have the best quarterback in the division with Sam Darnold. But I can't then turn and bet on the Jets for the next 3 to 5 years just because they have the best quarterback. He's not paired up with the best coach. Or even, I don't know, a top three coach, perhaps, in that division. I've talked about the way you get to NFL dynasties, the way you get to NFL championships, and I think even the way you get to teams that dominate a division is a partnership between coach and quarterback. The Jets have a quarterback. He still needs some development, by the way. But I don't believe that Adam Gase is the partner to develop him, to build a team around him, one that will own that division for the next 3 to 5 years. I also don't think it's the team who's now really started to put together the best young core of talent. The Miami Dolphins have just acquired draft capital that is rebuilding the entire image of that team. The Dolphins, of course, have a new young quarterback in Tua Tagovailoa, but they drafted across the defense, the offensive line. Really, the only thing the Dolphins didn't draft this past year are weapons for Tua, and they can probably do that in the near future. The Dolphins, in the same way maybe you could say the Cowboys of the early 90s, successfully, or the Browns of the teens, unsuccessfully, accumulate a ton of young talent that you would hope puts you over the top. It hasn't happened yet for the Cleveland Browns. Obviously, it did happen for the Dallas Cowboys. But I do think the Dolphins are accumulating the best young talent. That doesn't mean they're going to own the division. No, even without a quarterback, I'm betting on the best coach in the division. If I'm picking who for the next 3 to 5 years is going to own the AFC East, I'm going to stick with the team that has. I'm going to go with the New England Patriots. As long as they have Bill Belichick, and maybe that's a big if, because can I really, really 100% say Bill Belichick's going to be there for the next 3 to 5 years? No. But if he is, I have to put faith in the idea that he's going to rebuild that team, find that quarterback. Maybe he already has him and Stidham. Maybe it ends up being Cam Newton. Maybe somehow it ends up being one of those top quarterbacks in the 2021 draft. Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Trey Lance. I'm betting on Bill Belichick to build the New England Patriots back into a position where they still own that division 3 to 5 years from now. The best quarterback with the Jets and Darnold? No. The best young talent? The best young core in Miami? No. The best current team in Buffalo? No. I'm betting on the greatest coach of all time to keep that team 3 to 5 years from now as still the team to beat in the AFC East. You can let me know what you think at 888-729-3776. I asked you to help us fill out our big board on superhero movies, which we'll draft in the third hour of the Will Cain Show. Rob, who's working on the show today, said, don't forget Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. My kids will really appreciate that, especially if one of the guys draft that. They love that movie. But Jason in Alaska has another recommendation. What's up, Jason?
How's it going today, Will?
I'm good.
I appreciate the call or taking my call. Yesterday I waited on the phone for 2.5 hours and it just so happened I was in a spot in town where we don't get cell service. So I was a little disappointed in that, but that's another deal. But I have to say you've already hit one of my home runs, but I'm going to give you the guaranteed winner. And even if you guys don't pick it, I'm telling you, I strongly recommend for you to watch it because it's a movie that at times you totally don't even realize or think of it as a superhero movie. And it was the first movie that actually the industry potentially were going to give an Academy Award to, which I'm not sure if that still happened.
I'm on pins and needles, Jason. That's a great tease. Set it up. Now knock them down. What's the movie, man?
Logan. It's a movie about Wolverine and him coming to pass. It is by far one of the best superhero movies ever. And the other movie that I was talking about is Ragnarok. I was trying to go a little light today. That's an awesome movie comedy, but I'm telling you right now, Logan is the winner. I'll do anything outrageous if it doesn't win. I'm not walking across country like some of your callers. But I will put my name and reputation, which doesn't mean anything, on the line to tell you right now that's the winner.
Okay, a couple things, Jason. I appreciate the call. Thanks for sticking on hold yesterday. Sorry you didn't get through. Glad you did today. I agree on Thor Ragnarok. Again, so do my boys. And I have never got into the X-Men movies, the franchise, in any way. I'm not well-versed in those, but I'm willing to hear you that Logan is the way that I should start. So Logan's on the big board now. We'll check it out. I told you I talked to Clay Helton. Long interview. It's up on the Will Cain Show podcast feed. By the way, I asked him, you're in the heart of uncertainty. College football, will it get played? Will it get played in the Pac-12? Will it get played in the state of California? And more than that, you're in Los Angeles County, one of the biggest lockdown areas in the United States, Coach Helton. Do you feel good about USC playing not just its conference schedule, but non-conference schedule this year? Here's what he said.
I think everybody's going to be different now. Are we optimistic for the 2020 season? Yes, very much so. You know, we're looking forward to a 12-game season. the opportunity to play an exciting game versus Alabama, a rivalry game versus Notre Dame, 9 conference games fighting for a Pac-12 title and hopefully a playoff spot. But the one thing that I'm really appreciative, to be honest with you, is every conversation that I've been in, whether it's with the university, whether it's with the Pac-12, whether it's with the NCAA, every conversation has been priority one, the health and safety of the student athlete. And as a guy that considers I've got 3 children by birth and 110 that I got the honor to adopt that right now are scattered from Connecticut to Hawaii, I'm appreciative as an adopted father to an adopted son that, and these guys are going to be watched after. And each time period may be just a little bit different. But as we're talking about the fall and progressing to the fall, this thing is really trending in the right direction.
USC head coach Clay Helton saying he believes there will be a season and a 12-game season that includes a non-conference schedule. He wasn't sure when, but he thought it would happen. You're going to hear the whole conversation on the Will Cain Show podcast feed. Coming up, the UFC is back this weekend. What should we expect? It's next on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
What is this, 2-3 events before anybody else even gets back? The UFC's back again, this time it's in Vegas. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. You missing baseball? Tune in tomorrow night for a Major League Baseball Classic. Game 6 of the 2011 World Series between the Cardinals and Rangers presented by Progressive Insurance. Coverage begins at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. The Bundesliga is back. I've seen games now for 2 weeks, I believe, out of Germany. The Premier League says they're coming back June 17th. There's some rumblings about, what is it, late July maybe? I'm not reporting yet, but late July for the NBA. And, of course, the match, Woods and Manning against Brady and Mickelson. But UFC is on to its, what, second, third event? Errol Hawani, ESPN's MMA reporter here on the Will Cain Show. What is this? Since this all started and everything's coming back slowly, what is this? Is this our second UFC event or is it our third?
Fourth, believe it or not, Will.
Really? How about
that? They had 3 in Jacksonville on the 9th, 13th, and 16th, and they took a bit of a break, and now they're back 2 weeks later for their first event back in Las Vegas.
So, okay, awesome. Fourth event back, UFC clearly. You know what I've said several times? Tell me if you disagree with this, Ariel. Like, when I was a kid, my dad was a lawyer, and I told this before, so forgive me for those people listening who have heard it before, but he was big on, like, action. He always was like, you are ready, aim, fire. He goes, I'm fire, aim. And I was like, okay, Dad. But he had a point sometimes, like, in the midst of a crisis and you're looking for solutions, you find them in the fight as much as in the planning room. It sure seems like Dana White and UFC are like, jump in, start figuring it out on the go. Surely that's what's gone on, right? I mean, whatever started with the first event back to now, they've learned a ton of lessons.
They've learned a little bit, but, you know, there's a major difference. I've been asked this question a couple of times now. What's the difference between the UFC is doing and what they've been able to do as opposed to what Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL can't seem to figure out just yet? Of course, the NHL seems to be figuring it out sooner rather than later. But the major difference is there's no Fighters Association. So Dana White, and he alluded to this earlier today on First Take, he can, you know, as long as he could get 24 fighters to sign up, he doesn't have to go through a board of governors. He doesn't have to get the consent of the Fighters Association / Players Association. He is literally the judge and jury. He's the commish. He's the owner. He's everything rolled into one. And so that's why it's been a lot easier for them to get rolling. Now, if you look at their first event on May 9th compared to this one, yeah, they made modifications. And you have to also look to the fact that they're now in Nevada as opposed to Florida. Florida is not a very good Athletic Commission, if I'm putting it mildly. Nevada and California are the gold standard. Nevada has been a lot stricter as far as their rules are concerned. So, you know, you're going to see different kinds of rules and setups for this particular event. But the main thing that they've been able to benefit from is that they can literally do whatever they want because that's the way the sport is currently structured.
Hey, Ariel Helwani, host of Ariel Helwani's MMA show here on The Will Cain Show. I know a little bit, but obviously not as much as you, because I did a weight-cutting piece way back in the day on UFC. When you bring up athletic commissions, you say, oh, Florida's not so great, but Nevada and California are the gold standard. I know to some extent, like, that's about rules on weight-cutting, for example, doping, stuff like that, right? Is that how you're differentiating? What are you factoring into good versus bad athletic commissions?
Okay, yeah, and that's a really fair question. Sorry for glossing over it. You know, first of all, Nevada and California, they regulate the most combat sports event per year, right? So obviously they have a lot more money to invest in officiating. They have a lot more money to invest in judging, refereeing, but also to do things like monitor weight cutting and make it as safe as possible. So you have these other states like Florida, like Texas, that sometimes get a bad rap, but it's because the UFC and the major boxing and MMA events don't come there very often, so they don't have as much resources to put into having the best judges, paying for the best referees, to monitor the weight-cutting process a month out like they do in California and checking the fighters and really, like, spending a lot of time, money, and effort into figuring out, okay, if a fighter comes in and, you know, he still has 10% of his body weight left to cut, is that safe? Should we pull the plug? Should we make it into a catch weight? I mean, there's so much that goes into these fights. And then when you consider, you know, the level of officiating that you'll get in some states as opposed to others, you know, sometimes it's like the UFC comes to Oklahoma City, and because the state of Oklahoma is overseeing and regulating this event, you know, Joe Schmo, who owns a karate dojo in downtown Oklahoma City, gets a chance to judge a major UFC event. And that's just ludicrous to me. And that speaks to a larger problem in our sport and in combat sports. There should be a national commission, in my opinion, but because it's all broken up into states, you'll see some states have, you know, better resources than others.
Ariel Helwani here on the Will Cain Show. That's enlightening. Okay, so that's also interesting about what Dana White said on First Take about the lack of a union. I'm sure that's true. He can just find willing labor who wants to get in the ring.
And I don't want to interrupt, but he never actually said the union part, but he was essentially saying, I'm benefiting from this. Basically, the question was, you know, why are you able to do this and others can't? He's like, well, because I decide and no one else. And so what exactly did he say? He's saying that.
And he's got willing fighters who essentially willing labor who wants to get in there and do it. Now tell me what's different. Four events in on the testing. By the way, another thing versus the NBA and NHL is just the sheer number of people. There's less, right? I mean, there's because we're looking at one-on-one fighters, granted with camps and granted with a whole card of fights, but still adds up to, I have to think, less than two NHL teams and its support staff. So that's got to help. I remember the fighter that tested positive. I think that was in the first event back, right? Or was it the second?
Yeah.
And what have they changed on that front, Ariel, going into Vegas this weekend? Anything?
Okay. Yeah. So, initially they asked the fighters to take a nasal swab test upon checking into the hotel and an antibody test and daily temperature checks. And so they were just doing one. Now, and that was for the three events in Florida. For this event, upon checking in, the fighters had to take the throat test. And I still haven't been given a reason as to why they changed it from the nasal test to the throat swab test for COVID-19. I'm not an expert, but they did change that. I'm not sure which is better or worse, but I think that that is worth noting. And also what they're doing is, okay, as opposed to there, you just take the test and we'll let you know if you're positive or negative, and then we'll decide what to do afterwards. The new rule is you check in, you take the test, you have to go to your room and wait until we tell you, whether it's 24 hours or so, that you're good to go. Once you're good to go, you can go about your business. You can't leave the hotel. You can't leave the premises. You can work out there. They're giving them, you know, private rooms to work out and cut weight. And then after the weigh-ins, which happened today, you have to take a second one. So they've added a second test now. And then you have to wait. After that test, you cannot leave your hotel. So, like, now the fighters cannot leave their room until tomorrow when they'll get the results before they go to the arena to fight. Now, I would suggest you should probably take a third test once the event is over, because now you're really coming in contact with people, but they haven't made that modification yet.
Hey, real quick, Ariel, before we get out of here, I don't think you haven't traveled for these yet, I believe, unless you have recently.
I have not.
These these tests, Ariel, do you know, are they the ones that like go way back into brain matter?
Or yes.
They are?
Yeah, so
because I've seen some on TV that look like they can just do like the rim of the nose or just slightly up in the nostril. And then there's those other ones that look like they're hitting the back of your eyeball.
Yeah, no, I spoke to all the fighters that were on that first card because it was so new, and they were all telling me that it was the worst thing. I mean, these are some of the toughest human beings on the planet, and they said it literally felt like someone was tickling your brain. Now, I haven't spoken to someone who's done the throat and the nasal. Dana White did an interview yesterday. He's done it, and he said that the throat one is worse. I haven't talked to anyone who's told me that they've taken both, but for me, I don't know, maybe it's because I have such a big nose. I feel like the nose one is worse, but maybe I'm crazy.
Okay. Ariel Helwani, ESPN's MMA reporter, host of Ariel Helwani's MMA show here on The Will Cain Show. Thanks a lot, Ariel.
My pleasure. Thanks, Will.
All right. It's UFC Fight Night, Woodley versus Burns, Saturday in Las Vegas, prelims on ESPN and ESPN Plus at 6 p.m., and the main card on ESPN and ESPN Plus at 9 p.m. Eastern time. Coming up, what's it like to have fake news suggest you're fired while you're on the job? USC head football coach Clay Helton got the news while in a recruit's living room. You got to hear that next on The Will Cain Show.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
You know, you could usually take it to the bank. I mean, it's a truism. You draft a quarterback in the first round, you're going to play him. Now, maybe that won't hold true for Jordan Love in his first year. But you'd have to think it does hold true eventually for Tua, right? You draft a quarterback in the first round, you're going to play him in his first year. Set the over-under usually at about 4 or 5 games. Is it different for Tua Tagovailoa? Hip, coronavirus? Has 2020 proved different to that truism? Let's set the over-under on when Tua will play. Coming up a little bit later here on The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Small business protection for more than vehicles, with insurance expertise to keep your company moving forward. More at ProgressiveCommercial.com. The news that is engulfing the nation is that Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, who killed George Floyd in Minneapolis, Minnesota, was arrested Friday and charged with third-degree murder and manslaughter, according to Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman. That's the latest on what's going on in Minneapolis. We'll have more discussions about that, including a long discussion early next week with our buddy Damian Woody. But for now, I had a long conversation with USC head football coach Clay Helton. And Clay Helton has lived in uncertainty for years, 2 years. I mean, it's kind of fascinating when you think about it. There are some coaches out there, and I hope I don't say this in this cut I'm about to play you, but there's some coaches out there who get their job seemingly always through the interim status. Maybe not always, but I had that conversation with Wade Phillips a few weeks ago. I did a long conversation with him as well. And it's fascinating. It's the same kind of, it's a lane, a genre, a type of coach who has to first be interim to get head coach. Maybe it's the football guy, right? If you're putting like a label on it, it's like, he's football guy. He's not offensive whiz-bang genius interviewer. He's football guy. And he goes from interim to head coach. That's what Wade Phillips has done. That's what Clay Helton has done. He was interim coach at Memphis. He was interim head coach for one game at USC before they gave the job to Steve Sarkisian. And then he was interim coach after Steve Sarkisian before he became the head coach. And although he had a couple good years to start out, it hasn't been so great the last two. And Clay Helton has been on the hot seat for a long time. And I asked him about that, including when it got the hottest. Listen to this. It's got to take a toll. I mean, I've seen the reports where a booster said the state of the program was dog. Forgive my language. Mm-hmm. You know, the social media backlash has been, mm-hmm. you know, negative towards you. It's got to take a personal toll and weigh on you to some degree.
Well, I guess maybe it's, well, I'll be honest with you, the experiences that I've had before and the life experiences I had, you know, and again, I'm thankful. I've been in the profession my whole life, whether it was with my dad, or whether it's 26 years myself. So all 47 years of my life have been involved in some way, shape, or form in the sport. And, yeah, there's comments and opinions out there. But the one thing is you've got to be disciplined and strong enough to not let an opinion affect your decision-making or what you believe in. Again, when you're in that leadership position, you have to do what and what fits you to what you believe in. And once you make a decision, go full speed and don't have regrets with it. And you just can't do this job by focusing or really concentrating on outside opinion.
You know, opinions are one thing, Coach. I've seen the story you've talked about where actually there was a news report that you were fired. It was this past, I believe, December. And did you get notice of that while you were in a recruit's living room?
I actually did. We were getting ready to sign a really good player that is on our team right now, Josh Jackson, wide receiver. And I'm sitting there, and I guess the reports start coming through. My phone's just like buzzing in my pocket, being a million miles an hour, but I don't ever take it out when I'm in a recruit's home. And to be there with him and say, oh, he goes, Coach, I don't know if you're seeing this. I said, well, I'm here with you, so I know it's not true. the biggest thing was to be able to, you know, I wanted to be able to get to my family, you know, after getting out of that house, just to be able to let them know, you know, because I've got three kids and a wife, and want them to understand what's going on, you know, that no, don't believe what's out there. You know, media, everybody tries to scoop everybody. Everybody's trying to get the first word, and it happens, you know. So I wish it wouldn't have, because it doesn't help you as far as recruiting, and it puts your family in a stressful situation. But that's the world we live in right now, is to try to be the first to report. And fortunately for myself, that was an untrue report. And, you know, I immediately called a team meeting right after getting out of that living room. I got in the car, left Josh's house, called my family, let them know everything was okay, called a team meeting, let our kids know everything was okay, and moved forward. But that's sometimes the world we live in.
USC head football coach Clay Helton on a long form podcast with me. You can hear more of us. It's on the Will Cain Show podcast feed. By the way, speaking of pretty hard to recruit when rumors, or not just rumors, reports, fake news of your firing are bombarding you and the recruit's phone. I also asked him, how hard is it to recruit to USC right now? I mean, look, if you're looking at the most insecure place right now for the future of 2020 college football, you're probably looking at Los Angeles County, right? I mean, that's fair. We don't know if there's going to be college football anywhere. Maybe Michigan's up there with it. Michigan and LA County. I mean, I think we are. And I think everything is trending to the direction we are going to have college football. And I think it's even trending to the direction we're going to have fans in the stands. But let's just measure the insecurity. It goes from that to the Pac-12. Higher that, you know, football's on a less firm footing there. Even higher in the state of California, because Gavin Newsom's been pretty strict. He said pro sports can come back in June. No word yet on collegiate sports, and with Cal State system saying no students on campus, you got to think that the ground underneath your feet's a little less firm. And then even higher uncertainty in Los Angeles County, where Mayor of Los Angeles, Eric Garcetti, has control of some of that area, and he's certainly been very, very strict in his shutdown orders. So I wondered, is that hard to, A, keep students on campus, like keep them out of the transfer portal? And he said only one we've had go to the transfer portal is JT Daniels, and that's because Keaton Slovis has arrived as our starter. Daniels is now, as of yesterday, at the University of Georgia. And I said, what about negative recruiting and getting guys to commit? He said, it hasn't been a problem yet. And I have to say, as a Texas Longhorn fan, I've seen some direct examples of that. USC is still pulling some recruits, not just in California, but from other places across this nation to go to USC. So Clay Helton, a guy that's lived in uncertainty. You can hear more about what that's like on the Will Cain Show podcast feed. The NBA owners and GMs have been polled. They've been surveyed. Did they like that World Cup pool play idea, or do they want to play in tournament? What do they want? Well, I have the results of a survey, and let's start to set the over-under on when Tua Tagovailoa will play. That's coming up on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Geico has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Let's set the over-under on when Tua Tagovailoa sees the field. That's coming up on the Will Cain Show. You missing basketball? Tune in Sunday night for an NBA Classic Game 7 of the 2017 NBA Finals between the Cavs and the Warriors, presented by AutoZone. Coverage begins at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Before I get into that, I was just two things hit my radar. I heard about this interview between Dana White, UFC president, and Dan Le Batard today on the Dan Le Batard Show, and then I was looking at a tweet from Ariel Helwani, who was just on our show, our MMA reporter. I'll read you Ariel's tweet first, and then we'll hear how this went down with Le Batard and White earlier today. So Ariel Helwani tweeted, Dana White told the media today that John Jones was asking for, quote, Deontay Wilder money to move up to the heavyweight to fight Francis Ngannou. Still no word on what that exact number was. Well, to that, Mike Coppinger, who covers boxing for The Athletic, responded, Deontay Wilder earned $30 million guaranteed for his rematch with Tyson Fury. So could it be $30 million? Back to Ariel's tweet. He said, Wilder is ESPN's third-ranked heavyweight and currently not in the pound-for-pound rankings, while Jones has been the top-ranked light heavyweight in the sport since 2011 and is either one or two on every pound-for-pound list I've seen recently, including ESPN's. Jones is also considered either the greatest or second-best fighter in the history of the sport on most lists. So, Deontay Wilder made $30 million in a rematch, with Tyson Fury. Numbers get bigger in a rematch. Deontay Wilder, do you guys think Bubba's on the show, Nuno's on the show? Do you think Deontay Wilder is more famous than John Jones? Like, if you just did the Q rating and asked people on the street, more famous, Deontay Wilder or John Jones, who do you think wins that?
I think John Jones, but because of all the out of the octagon issues he's had. And he also does come from a, you know, if you're a football fan, you know about his family, you know Chandler Jones and everything else. But I think out of the octagon stuff will increase his Q rating.
Yeah. And then there's the actual business side, you know, the buys, like boxing versus UFC. I mean, you got to take Conor McGregor out of it because he blows every UFC pay-per-view buy out of the water. But I'm doing something really dangerous and stupid here. I'm scrolling through the comments, but like pay-per-view buys for Wilder Fury or any Wilder match versus Jones. I don't know if you can look that up, Nuno. I'd be fascinated to know that. But this pay for UFC fighters, there is a gulf. Everybody talks about a gulf between what boxers make and UFC fighters make. And I'm not sure the popularity today maintains that same gulf. You see what I'm saying? Well, apparently Dan Le Batard wanted to ask Dana White about that today on the Dan Le Batard Show. And I got, from what I'm told, tense. This is the first time I'm hearing this. Let me hear that first cut, Bubba.
Money is always an issue in all of sports, you know. The difference is that, you know, when these guys go off and start saying things publicly, you know, we don't go crazy and whatever. They all can, you know, have their opinions and voice them however and whenever they want.
But what do you say to people like me who say your fighters aren't paid enough?
What the hell do you know? That's what I say to you. You don't know anything about the business.
Well, but can you
yap? You like the yap. You don't know anything about the business, and that's just your style. I just say, you know, this guy doesn't know anything.
Okay. Well, Dana and I have had an interaction like that. We got over it. We got over it. He came on the Will Cain Show. I'm curious. Do I need to hear this other one? It's a longer cut, Nuno, but how much should John Jones get paid? I am kind of interested in this pay gap between boxers and UFC fighters, and does it follow the popularity or viewership gap? I'm curious the correlation between those two.
I mean, and that what he pretty much said was in this that, hey, John Jones can tell you guys how much he's made, even with all his arrests, that, you know, he's made a lot of money. He can
tell you. This is what Dana White said?
Yeah, like he can tell you guys.
Let me hear it. Just play a little bit. We can always bail out.
How much do you think Bones Jones should be paid for an Ngannou fight in the heavyweight division?
It's John Jones' business. It's his business. If John Jones wants to come out and talk about how much money he's made in his last four fights, that's John Jones' business. I got no problem. I would tell you right now. I would tell you right now on this call how much John Jones made in his last four fights, despite being arrested how many times and all the things that have gone on with John Jones. But that's not my business. It's his. And the question, the answer to the question, so when John Jones did this new deal that he's under right now, going up to the heavyweight division was factored in, right? But even if John Jones came back and said, you know what, I know we factored this in, but I want this fight and I really want to do this, can we bump my money up? We would still say yes, but not at the number that John Jones is asking for. That's okay. Not going to happen. John Jones gets a piece of.
Okay, and the number, what we're seeing is what Dana White said is Deontay Wilder level money. And so Wilder made $30 million on his fight, his rematch with Tyson Fury. Nuno, do you have those pay-per-view buys? I'm just curious.
So it looks like they did between $800,000 to $850,000, the rematch did. The first fight looks like it did about
that's Wilder Fury in the rematch.
Correct.
Okay. And the first fight was $325,000. Am I seeing that?
Yeah, that's what it looks like. So
and you got $30 million for that, $825,000. Okay, and then, all right, and then what's the last John Jones fight got on pay per view buys? Do you have that?
No, I'm trying to find that.
What's the last non Conor McGregor fight in the UFC had in terms of pay per view buys?
Well, what was it? The one that we recently had, that the pay per view one, month and a half?
Yeah, that was during the pandemic, so that's going to be
a little over 700,000. Usually the ones, I know Brock Lesnar, when he was fighting in 2010, did 1.1. That's showing in terms of non-McGregor.
I see Ronda Rousey, Holly Holm was 1.1. Yeah. See if you can find the last John Jones fight. I'm just curious. I don't have a big take on this. I'm not going to fight. I'm not here to, I don't have a cause. I don't have a stake in the game, but I am curious about the differential between boxing and UFC in pay and in pay-per-view. Let's revisit what's going down in Minneapolis with our friend Myron Metcalf next on The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Thank you for listening to The Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to The Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.